invested, Lord invested that money and built up our capital.
Did the teachers at that time contribute to this?
Oh yes.
As they do today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did at that time. I had a boy stop me the other day from the University of Michigan. He was over here at a retirement party. He went to India on our Indian program for 2 or 3 years. When he came back to Ann Arbor, I had a letter from him. He said, would you see that I get my money back? I said, if I was you, I wouldn't make the request to get your money back right now. You wait till you retire. And you will get back not only your own contributions plus earnings, but the state contribution plus earnings. He said, I didn't think of that. Well, I saw him the other day. He just retired from the University of Michigan. He said, am I glad I wrote you that letter? That was a little quirk of the law. One of the things we just had to do was a routine operation.
What, you must have had considerable staff if you were covering the whole state.
Well, we had, let's see, where we were down in the First National Bank building where we occupied the third or fourth floor. That building, we had a considerable staff. Of course we had to have actuaries and people to do the routine work. I remember I was out in Glacier Park fishing. And one day the ranger looked me up. He said, there's a telephone call down at the office for you. I said, who knows? There isn't a single person knows I'm out here. When I got to the telephone call, it was from the executive secretary of our retirement system. Said they had to move, and he wanted to get my part of the approval for moving down to a new location. He said we have to do it in a day or so, and I can't wait till you get through catching fish. So we moved on to a building on Johnson Street. Now we're in the building over. I'm no longer in the board, of course.
But the board still exists.
Mm-hmm. But those were a lot of interesting problems we had come up. Matter of fact, I was pretty busy taking care of all these activities I had my fingers in.
That sounds it. Could you tell me a little bit more about the, in details, about the Indian program?
Well, I don't know a whole lot about the details of it.
Do you know how it started?
Barry over in the, he's still operating the foreign program. He's over here in the research building.
Barry?
Barry, Milton Barry. He can give you all the details of the Mexican program.
Do you know how the Indian program started, or how foreign programs in general started?
He can give you all. I'm not too familiar with that.
I see. But they're still going on, in other words.
I worked at it a lot when these people came over here, because, you see, we sent them on tours of the United States. And I made the arrangements for the visits at most of these institutions they went to, as well as the industry.
The people who came here.
That's right.
But you didn't have anything to do with people who went there.
No.
I see.
No, they were people from here.
Mm. Yeah.
And some of our people are still going over there. I think one of the boys downstairs is going over to, where did he tell me he was going? Over to Saudi Arabia, I think he's going. So Barry can tell you all about that.
Indian, Mexican, any other countries that you...
Oh, quite a number. Quite a number, but the part that I had my fingers in was the Indians. College of Engineering in India. And some Indian officials too came over.
Do you know what kinds of things were done over there?
I think these other people could
tell me,
give
that.
You a little. Professor Delamont was over there for quite a period, and Roy Lindbergh was there for quite a period. Barry has the whole story over there in his. We didn't send only our own people, we recruited people from other institutions to go.
As part of the Wisconsin program?
That's right. And they were temporarily on our staff. This man I met the other night, University of Michigan is one. Another one of the name of Engelman, now at the University of Cincinnati, that I talk to quite often. People had to have a special interest in doing that sort of thing. And we picked out the people who were interested and qualified.
What was the source of funds for this?
I believe the Indian government supported a large part of it. I don't know how much we supplied over here.
Did our federal government have anything to do with it?
I don't know whether the federal government did or not, or whether it all came from the Indian government. I think probably it was a split arrangement. Mm-hmm. Barry can tell you all the details of that because he carried the budget for it.
I see. One other thing that I haven't gotten to is what relationship was between mechanical engineering and war.
There wasn't any war thing.
Well, when there was.
Okay, we had no specific arrangements with them.
Have they supported engineering?
I think they have. I wouldn't know about that, whether they did or not, but they probably have supported a lot of things around the university. They probably made block grants for those purposes.
But you aren't aware of any in particular?
No.
Well, my next question is on a more personal level. I know that your brother was here for a while, and that he was instrumental in starting Wisconsin High School.
That's right.
Can you tell me anything about that, how this happened? And I know this would be secondhand information probably.
Well, he had been over at the university in Germany. And when he came back, he went to Columbia. He was at Columbia for a while, going back further than that. When he got out of the University of Nebraska in 1895, he went up to Leadville, Colorado as a science teacher, chemistry teacher. He was a chemist primarily. After he'd been there a couple of years, they made him superintendent of schools. He was there for about 2 years, then he went to New York on a special appointment he had. And I think he was a year in Germany. And then he came back to this country, and then he came to university in the Department of Education. It was fairly new then. And he was interested in training of teachers, particularly the course for the training of teachers, which eventually wound up with the Wisconsin High School. And he had a principal by the name of Miller that I think was principal almost during the entire life of the institution. And he was here from 1905 or 6, I guess, I'm guessing at this, till about 15 or 16, I guess it was long in there someplace, when they went out to the University of Montana. And he was there for a while, and then he went down to Purdue where he stayed until he died.
And he became president, didn't he?
Yeah, he was president of Purdue. He graduated in 1895 from the University of Nebraska.
Well, I understand that he really was a person who sort of started Wisconsin High School.
Yeah, he did. I got a book on that. Well, I guess it's at home now.
Call the title of the book?
No, I can't. It's got a cover on it. But I'll bring it over.
I'd be interested in looking at it.
It's a book that came out of Purdue. And I think it tells the story of the Wisconsin High School.
Oh, well, I'd very much like to
and, John, dean of the School of Education, John, what was his name? He died a few years ago. I can't remember.
Well, we can look up his name. What about him?
Well, he was extremely active in all activities of the School of Education. And there was a history of that whole development that I turned over to John Guy Fawkes. That's who it was. And before he got it back to me, he died.
So you don't know what's happened to it?
I don't know what's happened to it. We did a lot of interesting things
this
down
is from, there. From Indiana from faculty.
He have a music building down there that's probably the peak of anything in this country. He went out and dug up all the money for it. And it's, I think, got the largest auditorium, the most perfect acoustics of any building in the country. This is an engineering school. They put this school of music.
Oh, they did. Well, that's nice.
Well, Purdue is a up and coming institution. I got a lot of friends at Purdue.
Well, now I'd like to get to some of your personal activities. Have you been principally involved in or since you retired?
Looking for a free day.
Well, I know you've been very busy. Can you tell me some of the things you've been busy with?
Well, one of the things that I spend a lot of time on is the Corners Club Foundation.
The what?
The Corners Club of Madison
Corners,
Foundation.
Yes.
I happen to be in the board of that foundation, and we are building up funds to finance the various projects of the Kiwanis Club, which I've been a member for over 50 years.
What kind of projects are you that they have?
We have a continuing project at Oakwood Homes and Salvation Army. Cities do. We have no fixed standard for appropriating money, but as cases come up, we appropriate federal money, scholarships. We help finance the Wisconsin Youth Symphony. We have a variety of activities in the agricultural field. We're really getting our capital up to the point now where we have enough income to finance a lot of projects. In fact, we have a $500 a year continuing appropriation to the Kid Zoo down at Violet Park.
Oh, I've been reading about that. Yeah. That's new.
We have a lot of very interesting people on the board. We have Fred Mackey, who was president of Madison Gas and Electric. We have Donald McDowell, who's retired secretary of the Department of Agriculture. He's a lawyer. Ted Blackman, who's the son of our former Professor Blackman. We have Arthur Kurtz, who just retired from the Department of Agriculture. We have 9 people on the board. We meet about once a month. We're trying to build up our financial structure now, and that takes a lot of time.
What are your sources of finances?
We have a number of resources. We have a birthday plan in the club. Each member on his birthday contributes an amount of money equal to 25 cents times his age.
Oh, this can mount up.
Well, I had another, thanks to your question, I had a dream one night. I got a letter from one of our members with some money in it. Well, I forgot all about it. 3 or 4 days later, I got a letter from one of our members. Said, I want to contribute some money to the foundation. I'm sending you a check for $3,000.
My word.
We're starting from scratch. And we hope to have our capital up to $100,000 at the end of the year.
So you're having a campaign?
No, our board can't campaign. Under our articles of incorporation, the lawyers aren't agreed, but they think we cannot carry on an active campaign as a club, but the members are.
Individually you can?
Individually you can.
You can solicit funds individually.
We're a tax-exempt corporation. And we've earned last year about 14% on investments. So we're crawling up now where we're going to have about a yearly allocation of about $10,000 a year to finance these projects around town. We have all kinds of activities going on to create money. We went out and cleaned out a forest here last year and cut it up into fireplace lengths. They sold all of that. And we're raising quite a lot of money that way.
Well, it all sounds very worthy. Well, what else?
Well, this is a very serious business, this raising money and looking after the taxes and all that sort of thing, keeping people happy. That's quite a job. I spend quite a lot of time. And then I spend a lot of time with the Masonic Temple on their various activities. In fact, I'm going up to Green Bay on the 25th, I guess, for a regional meeting we have up there. I've been quite active in the organization ever since I joined 68 years ago.
So wow. What kinds of things do they do that you're involved in?
It's the oldest fraternal organization in the world.
Oh, I know, it's pretty old.
Operates all over the world. And we support these burn hospitals, these children's hospitals, which we have quite a number around the country. The number of children we take into these hospitals is astounding, without one cent of expense to them, not a cent.
That's wonderful.
And we have, I think it's 4 burn institutes now. And we sponsor a lot of medical research. In addition to having a lot of fun.
That's nice too.
Incidentally, they have the best dining room in the city of Madison.
Where is it located?
In our temple.
Oh, in the temple. I know where that is.
What a time when all the members ate free. Not anymore.
No more.
We're getting ready to do some building work on the north end of that block we own. We're going to expand the facility down there. And there are about 10 or 15 auxiliary organizations that operate out of the Masonic Temple. We have a shrine club, which is a service club, meets every Friday down there. they raise money and they, oh, they do everything, and they're supporting the hospitals in Chicago. And we just bought a electric wheelchair for a boy out here at Prairie du Sac. And the Knight Templars have an eye activity all over the country for blind people. Mm. And they're sponsoring a big research program all over the United States on mental diseases. There's a scholarship in the School of Journalism that comes from the Scottish Rite organization.
Oh.
Those are just some of the things that, mm-hmm. that keeps me out of trouble.
I see. Well, another thing which is more professional that keeps you out of that has recently kept you out of trouble, because you told me about it, was this power conference that you went to in
Chicago. I just came back from that in April. I've been connected to that ever since it started.
Will you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, that's an organization which was started originally to promote the interests of the electric utility industries. And the problems that we tackled then were largely technical problems. It has grown to, it was a very small organization. We met in one room when it started. About 25 years ago, I guess it was, one of the men from Commonwealth Edison proposed that we get the students and the faculty interested in this activity. So they set up a what they call a student faculty attendance program. And we select from about 40 engineering colleges each year students and faculty who are interested in the power field to come down to the annual meeting in Chicago each year. We pay all their expenses. We take about 75 students and 75 faculty people. And the particular activity I'm working on with them now is to get these people, select these people, and take care of the arrangements of getting them to down to the meeting in Chicago and getting them home again, which is, it takes about 2 solid months. They gave me the little plaque over here.
Well, this plaque says, desiring to honor one who has contributed greatly to the education of youth, the engineering profession, and to the power industry, the American Power Conference awards this citation for distinguished service to Ben George Elliott for outstanding achievement as an educator, engineer, administrator, and humanitarian. For extraordinary contributions to the development of the highest standards in engineering education, for exemplary and inspiring leadership in the application of engineering principles to the field of power generation, and for his wise counsel, valued guidance, and dedicated service to the American Power Conference. April 27th, 1966.
Records.
You're now talking about the Engineer Society of Milwaukee. Since before they kept records, when would that have been?
Hmm?
When was this that you started?
I started the society, I joined that society in 1914.
And they weren't keeping records that early.
I still am. Still.
You're still a member. Well, and this is a nice citation from them. Recognition of distinguished service to the engineering profession of the state of Wisconsin to the youth of this nation, Benji Elliott. Professor Emeritus of Mechanical Engineering, University of Wisconsin, is herewith named Engineer of the Year for 1959. Presented this 24th day of February in the year 1960. How very nice.
So this takes a little time each year. I go to their meetings once in a while.
Well, yeah.
And I spent some time in the American Society of Mechanical Engineers, which is a national organization. I served as vice president for 6 years. I was able to travel all over the United States for them. I was on their council for quite a while, and I remember that I represented them on the Engineers Council for Professional Development. And I helped organize the Wisconsin Society of Professional Engineers, which I'm still a member. That was a long, long time ago. So if you wonder what I do in my spare time.
Well, I only know I've had a very difficult time arranging for recording you. I forget how many years I've been working at it. It's been a number.
And I hope to get on to my college class reunion in October down in Indiana.
What will this be?
This will be my 72nd.
Oh, that's impressive. Very impressive. In going over my notes, I discovered that there were a few items that from our discussions earlier that we really haven't touched on, and I thought before we concluded perhaps we might go into a couple of those if it's all right. One was a detail about Glenn Frank, which you mentioned as to what you consider the real reason he was brought here.
Well, he was brought here, I believe, by the, if I remember correctly, by the liberal element on the Board of Regents.
Well, you said something about punishing the university.
Well, that was political.
Well,
that was
in what
a political angle to it.
In what way?
Well, it goes back to the signing of the Anna Follett petition. Resolution during the war.
This was World War I.
Yes, I have a copy of that at home.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm.
And what was the connection with Glenn Frank?
Well, the Follets, we were told, not publicly, they wanted to bring a man here that would. I can't think of an additional word, better word than punish the university for the faculty stand on La Follette's attitude toward the war.
Well, just what was his attitude toward the war?
He was against it.
He was a pacifist?
He was against the war.
And the university?
The university didn't do this publicly, although the resolution which the faculty members signed was that was a public document, I believe. Mm-hmm. It was published. The Capital Times used to publish it once a year, but they've gotten out of that habit now.
I see. So this is a document passed by the faculty in opposition to the faculty.
Individual
stand.
Members of faculty.
Oh, individual members.
Not collectively, as I remember. It was individual members of faculty.
In opposition to La Follette's stand?
That's right.
And you feel that as an outgrowth of this, probably Glenn Frank was brought in as president.
That was my personal feeling on the whole business.
I see. Well, it certainly is a possible result, I imagine, to get somebody of this type.
There was a situation where, I'll take for example, Louis Cullenberg of the chemistry department was opposed to the war, And there was a lot of pressure to force Louis Kahlenberg off of the university staff.
Because of his nationality?
Because of his stand on the war. He was against the war too. Remember, we had a meeting in Milwaukee with some of the members of the parallel group, University Visiting Board, I guess you call it.
Board of Visitors.
Board of Visitors. In Milwaukee to try to stop Louis from being dismissed from the university. I think all the members of the people who were at that meeting, if I remember correctly, have passed away.
Mm-hmm. Well, my memory is they succeeded. He was not dismissed.
Louis was, I think, not too judicious in what he said and when he said it.
Which antagonized people.
He was I used to know Louis pretty well. He used to tell me some of his problems. He lived right over here.
Oh,
fight.
He did?
Mm-hmm. One.
Other than Engineer's Day and your travels?
Oh, I think there was a renewed interest in the contacts between the university and the business establishments and the engineering societies of the state and individual members of the Alumni Association who graduates of the College of Engineering. I think it stimulated a very, very good or change in attitude on the part of a lot of the industries of the state. And we did get some very small financial grants as a result of it to carry on certain research projects. The grants weren't very substantial, but they were, at the beginning, they were breaking the ice.
Well, that must have been encouraging.
They were breaking the ice.
Well, is this a period that I came across the phrase the Dark Ages of Engineering? Is that the period that would refer to?
Well, we also had another activity. There was a group organized in the College of Engineering when Withy was dean. And we traveled the state quite extensively visiting high schools in an effort to get freshmen interested in an engineering career. And we visited great, great, great many of the high schools in the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Some in Milwaukee and, of course, all over the state. We went up as far as Superior. We visited all the larger high schools.
And that was successful.
I think that turned out pretty well. And of course that resulted, I think, in the fact that some of the high school people are brought in here now to visit the College of Engineering before they graduate from high school.
Yes, well this is done, I guess, not only in the mm-hmm. College of Engineering, but other colleges.
That was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Now we haven't talked very much about some of the early people who were here, and I was wondering if maybe you'd like to say a little bit about some of the people who were here when you first came.
Well, the chaplain impressed me most was John Mack, who was acting dean in the College of Engineering at that time. His son just died a few months ago.
What about him impressed you?
Well, first day I was in Madison, he invited me out to his house for dinner.
Well, that was nice.
Well, there was a connection here because I graduated from the same school he did. And he was quite interested in keeping in touch with the graduates that came into Madison.
As dean, how did he?
He was acting dean.
Oh, he was acting dean.
He was acting dean while Tenora was in Europe.
I see. How did he impress you as dean?
He did a very good job. He later became state chief engineer.
Left the university.
Mm-hmm.
How about people such as Storm Bull or Hoskins?
I just know him by name.
Which?
Steam Bull. Hotchkiss, Bill Hotchkiss. He was later president of the Michigan College of Mines up at Houghton.
And Charles King?
I didn't know him. I just knew about him.
Well, some of the people I'm sure you must have known are, well, for instance, Turner, whom you just mentioned.
Well, Danny Mead.
Danny Mead. Otto Kowalki.
Oh, Otto. I worked, Otto and I worked closely together all the years we were here.
How about presidents?
Well, Van Heisler president when I came.
Mm-hmm. Did you get to know him?
Fairly well.
One statement in my notes had something to do about Van Heist lecturing to the Senate. You recall what that was?
Van Heist had the habit, or practice rather. When there was a critical bill, critical to the university was up, he used to get on the pier before the members for the House of the Legislature. One United States Senator told me that they just shook in their boots every time he came down.
Why?
He'd take them apart. I guess I told you one night I was out at the Senate meeting and Van Heist was there and he took one of the senators all apart. They didn't like that personally, but he was truthful and forceful about the whole business.
Was he effective in getting what he wanted?
He was. He allegedly was the first graduate of what is now the College of Engineering.
Well, I'd have to look that up. It could be.
There's some connection there. That's way, 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 way back. When the, I guess, before the College of Engineering as such was organized.
In which case, he probably certainly was a staunch supporter of it.
I don't know whether his name is in the alumni record or not.
Yes, I think the university records would, mm-hmm. one could find out in the archives. Just what this connection was.
We also assumed he was a member of our group anyway.
Well, that was nice to have a supportive president, wasn't it? Now, who was president when you were chairman of Mechanical Engineering?
E.B. Pred for the most part.
And, well, I know you've said that Dykstra was not supportive.
No, he wasn't.
Was E.B. Fred?
Oh, yes, he was a different kind of individual all the way through.
Well, this I understand.
Yeah.
Are there any other people that you recall particularly, whom you worked closely with?
McCaffrey in Mining and Metallurgy, Richard L. McCaffrey. We worked closely with him when we were trying to get the cooperation of industry. And as a result of that, we organized some classes. Well, we had one at Beaver Dam that McCaffrey went up to. He was in metallurgy and they had a stove factory and a foundry in Beaver Dam. And he used to go to Milwaukee too. I was talking to one of the men in chemical engineering yesterday who was in that group that used to go to Milwaukee to help these people out on their home ground.
And how about Kurt Wendt, who's been here for a long time?
I knew Kurt when he was a student.
Oh, you did? Was he one of your students?
No. No, he was a civil. Oh, I guess he was in mechanics, largely. People like Kurt Wendt just come along once in a generation.
Yeah, in what way was he special?
Well, he was realistic, he was down to earth, he knew how to get along with people, he knew how to get things done, and those were not the characteristics some of the people we've had.
I guess this is true in any group. did you know Burgess?
Charlie?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I remember a very famous speech he made before the faculty.
Can you describe it?
They had buildings and grounds, put some little buildings around the campus with firing equipment. It was a chemical. The chemical they had in these containers to spray out in the small fires.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow or other, the name chemical engineers or chemical got connected with these little houses. And Burgess was in chemical engineering, and he was making a protest for the faculty that they should not connect the term chemical engineering with these firefighting houses around the campus. That's I think. I don't know, that was before after he founded the Burgess Battery Company.
Do you know any of the circumstances of his leaving here?
Well, I think he saw an opportunity in developing the battery business.
It was more lucrative, perhaps, than being on the university faculty?
I think I don't know whether he had completely severed his connection with the university or not, but I believe he did. I know him fairly well.
Well, someone you mentioned a while back was Dean Morton Withy.
Well, he was a lifesaver for us.
Well, would you go into that?
He came in after the Johnson episode.
Oh, yes, you talked about Johnson.
He befriended with President. And when the Regents made a decision on Johnson, they decided to get the opinions and vote of the faculty on a dean. And when the vote was taken, Withy got all but one vote, which was his own.
That's a
he was a
pretty impressive.
He was one of the best deans we've had.
Was he?
He used to go out with us on these little expeditions to high schools and in order to get out of the slump we were in, it worked.
That's a very good thing. Now, something else I was curious about, one of the people that I've taken note of is Lewis Thompson, and I guess was in dairy engineering, and I'm kind of curious about what
I just knew
dairy engineering is.
I just knew him. He's still alive, I believe, isn't he?
I don't know.
I think I saw him over at the retired faculty meeting. I may be mistaken on that. But there was ag engineering at that time.
Well, can you tell me that the relation between ag engineering and the College of Engineering?
At that time, there was no direct connection between the
none
two.
None whatsoever?
But it gradually developed. So that ag engineering was not recognized at the beginning as a branch of engineering. For some reason or other, it just wasn't, that's all. Some schools have very strong departments of ag engineering, among them University of Nebraska. And when the whole ag activity sprung up or changed from a purely mechanical operation, getting into the technical branches of engineering, they were accepted, and we worked with them quite carefully, but they're still separate.
Well, just what does ag engineering comprise?
Well, it has to do with all the mechanic, all the operations in operating a farm, tractors, all this complicated equipment, combines, all that sort of thing, emanated from ag engineering. Moline, the Moline Company, and there's a big company up at Horicon, building farm machinery. And I just was at State Fair last week, and you get a little idea of the complicated machinery they use in farming now. Ag got a new addition to their building over here.
On the campus?
Mm-hmm.
So are they? No, I wasn't aware of that.
And they got some good men over there. So the connection between ag engineering and college of engineering is very good now.
But it took a number of years to build it up.
Well, I think, I don't know technically whether it's a part of the college of engineering or not. I don't think it is. I think it's a part of the ag college. Of course, Iowa State's always had a very strong ag engineering department. Building a machine that'll go out and run through a cornfield and deliver the shelled corn.
This sort of thing always amazes me. I guess it is a surprise how these complicated things.
There is a lot of engineering around the farm nowadays. Particularly the big corporate farms.
Yes, well, one reads about this and also complains about the fuel they burned.
That's right.
Which I guess is one of the problems now.
Of course, even though the ag people were not technically a part of the engineering college, they worked together as individuals. Floyd Duffy was one that we worked with quite a lot.
We did. Any others that come to mind?
A man named Jones. I didn't know him quite as well as I did Floyd.
You don't know his first name?
Jones. I don't know what his first name was.
What were you saying about Duffy? Repeat.
This Duffy organized this talk, which he gave many, many places, on redesigning the cow.
If he had to do it, how he'd do it?
It was funny. At that time, a little more technical than most of the ag engineers.
Jones was.
I think his, I'm just depending upon memory now. I think he was primarily interested in farm roads and rural transportation and that sort of thing. And I think he may have had some interest in farm buildings too. That's just a hazy recollection I have.
Well, I suppose things like silos and whatnot would mm-hmm. also come under that
That's
category.
Right. And there are two or three other men that I don't remember my name too well were in that department.
Now, there are several anecdotes I also came across, going back to my original conversation mm-hmm. with you. One had something to do with Ray Owen's horse.
Yeah.
There were, Ray lived out on the other side of the lake, and he used to come in and go back on his horse. And he used to tie the horse back to the old engineering building. And, of course, standing there all day, the horse eventually created some nuisances around the parking lot over there, and there was some objecting to it. So I remember a faculty meeting they had in which the principal item was whether or not Ray Owen should be permitted to continue to park his horse out there.
Oh.
And there was another one, William Henry Leidy, who was in the Extension Division. He lived out in what they call now the Highlands, I believe.
There is a place out.
And he always brought a horse in. And they settled his case by making arrangements for him to park his horse in the university barn over here.
Well, that seems like a suitable arrangement. You don't know what happened to Ray Owen.
I don't know I don't know if that would be in the faculty minutes or not, but it was real funny.
Sounds like it. Well, you also mentioned something about a streetcar that jumped the track.
It pulled the trolley down?
Something like that.
Well, that I think happened over at the corner of Park and University Avenue. I see that the tracks came down and turned on Park Street.
Uh-huh.
I think that's where they... And it was quite a stunt, the kids thought, to pull the trolley down from the wire and stop the streetcar. That was quite a peak of devilment at that time.
Oh. Well, this one, this incident that you were thinking of at the time, had something to do with us jumping the track and getting stuck in the mud.
Oh, I think I was over at the corner of Park and University. I had a picture of it. But the picture I had belonged to a set of slides that Al Galistel had compiled, and I borrowed those slides from him and loaned them to a man in civil engineering who died shortly after. And before we could reclaim the slides, they had been disposed of somehow, and we'd never been able to find them.
Oh, what a shame.
Never been able to find those.
Well, that is a great pity. The other thing, anecdote you touched on a long time ago was something about Burge and sanding Bascom steps.
What was that?
Something about President Burge and the matter of sanding the Bascom steps. I think you said that he was telling E.B. Fred.
Well, that was the conversation after Fred became president. And he and Burge were having I think they were in Bascom Hall. And I think Burge said, Edmund, he said, you better get some sand on those steps and those approaches to the building here. Some of these older people might fall down and hurt themselves.
Advice to the new president, yeah. Is that it? Now, one other thing I wanted to talk about. We discussed a number of your outside activities last time. But we didn't touch on any of your hobbies, and I'm curious. I read that you have several.
Well, one of my hobbies, of course, is looking up the history and career and legends of Buffalo Bill, William F. Coley, who lived in our hometown. Another was railroading. I think I have an old picture here of the... visiting of all the national and state parks in the United States and Canada.
Oh, you said as a group, what, who was
the family, the just group? A family group. Each summer we used to go camping out in, we had a favorite spot out in Western Canada we used to go to. And I think we visited every national park in Canada. And at that time, I think we were only short one or two in the United States.
My word.
We visited every Capitol building in the United States.
You did?
We did. I think the only national park we missed was, no, there were two, Big Bend down in Texas and Carlsbad Canyons. We missed those two.
Well, I've forgotten how many there are, but there are an awful lot, particularly if you include Canada.
Yeah, we went, one summer we went to both Eastern Canada and Western Canada.
Well, we must have taken most of the summer to do
it. It did. I didn't work during the summer. We went touring.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Well, we, during spring vacations, we always had a specific objective for our spring trip. One year we took all the Mark Twain country on our trip.
No, that's an interesting area.
And we took the one, all the Abraham Lincoln country. And we went up to the Arcadia National Park up in Maine. Mm-hmm. That year we went clear down to Louisiana to see the birthplace of, who was that? Oh, who was that well-known? No, just slips my mind at the present. My youngest daughter had a hobby. She wanted to visit all the national Capitol buildings, and I think we got them all in.
So that's how that came about.
I think we got them all in. So we wouldn't take anything for those fine times we had during the summer. We used to camp out.
You'd camp
out? We lived in a tent.
So you drove, of course.
It was just 1,500 miles from my door out to our camping spot in Western Canada.
Did you make this sort of headquarters, or did you go there first?
Well, when we first went out there, we used to go around park in various places, but in later years, we picked out one spot and put up our tent there and left it there. Then we went out from there each day. That wasn't true in Eastern Canada, but that's true in Western Canada.
I see. Did you do any fishing on these trips?
I'm glad you put it that way. We didn't catch any fish.
Did you try?
There was a small boy, I remember, that used to come into Lake Moraine, and he had caught a fish in Lake Moraine when nobody else could. And he was running this fish out to people who couldn't catch fish to have their pictures taken with it.
Oh, that's fun.
He did quite a thriving business.
I think so. Real entrepreneur.
And then by myself and another man, Roy Nichols, over in Ag College, veterinary science. I used to go with him a lot up into Canada.
Did you catch fish there?
No, he's a fisherman deluxe. But I used to go with him when he'd go up to veterinary society meetings. And remember one year we went up to Banff with him, and he stayed in Banff, and we took his car, and we just traveled all over the country out there for 3 or 4 days.
Never been there, but I've been told it's beautiful.
Well, he was a veterinarian, and we used to go up in during the month of September after Labor Day, when all the animals were free again from the tourist business. And we learned more about wild animals with him than we did on any other trip.
I imagine.
And getting back to hobbies, of course, railroading was one of mine. Jim Woodburn and I used to travel around a lot to various railroad events.
Well, that seems quite natural, given your early experiences.
Just happened to see this picture there I had of Jim Woodburn we took on one of our trips.
This was, I see some trains in the background. Another hobby that a note suggested to me is the circus. Is that true?
I belong to the Circus Fans Association for many years.
Didn't know there was one, even.
Oh, yes. On the 8th of September, I'm going over to see Ringling Circus again in Milwaukee. Yeah. Guess it's the 9th of September I'm going over.
What, can you tell me about that organization a little?
Well, it's an organization, people who have been interested in the circuses all over the world, but particularly in the United States. I got interested in it because of my connection to the Buffalo Bill Circus Affair. And, of course, Baraboo being the home of circuses. Judge Golomar up there was a circus fan. We used to have a meeting two or three times a year. We used to have a group here in Madison. We used to get together and go to the circuses. About 6 weeks ago, I went out to the West Side Coalition, which you probably have heard of.
It's yes.
An organization that meets in the Midvale Lutheran Church. And gave them a story on Buffalo Bill.